I'm fucking livid that we are stuck in the timeline where Alex Jones is right. Kind of worse.
Oh no! Okay, no.
Why aren't the Amish afraid of COVID? Because they don't have TVs.
As I said, democracy is a system that reinforces authoritarian ideals.
I hope I don't get canceled. Talk to Steve.
Being a victim of a tragedy doesn't make you an expert in public policy.
Well, I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
Remember, they lost the Afghan war 10 years ago.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
I said, you don't get to tell us no. We're the state health department. And I said, hell no.
It wasn't making Christianity better. It was making rock worse.
What the fuck do you have on your face, Olivia?
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies and raise them to not be stupid.
Remember thinking, man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, shitposters, anarchists, and people of the internet, thanks for tuning in to episode 63 of O'Donnell for Liberty. As always, I'm your host, Justin. And before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether YouTube Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor, or on the air through LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and sharing it with your friends. And if you enjoy the content, you can check out our production team by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell for Liberty. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell4Liberty. And make sure to check out our sponsor, snackswag.com, for all your favorite Liberty merch, including some brand new designs for t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, coffee mugs, tote bags, and more. Again, that's snackswag.com. You can check out some awesome new collection of Liberty-themed shirts, hoodies, and more today. And if you want to keep in touch between shows, you can join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. And all those links can be found in the description of the video or podcast that you're listening to, as well as on O'Donnell4Liberty.com. So check the description, follow that link, and make sure you give it a visit today. Now, what are we talking about tonight? Well, same thing we talk about every night, really, when you roll it down to. What is the path to liberty in our lifetimes? Is it cultural? Is it political? Can it be achieved peacefully? And at what cost is it actually going to come? These are important questions we have to ask ourselves as we work towards making the world more free in our lifetimes. And if we want to become successful in our endeavors, we need to approach them with a sober face of reality. But aside from what shapes the best strategy takes, also the definition of liberty covers a vast expanse in the differing views and experiences of those who call themselves libertarians. So with so much in question, is it any wonder why we feel as though our freedom is so often manifestly threatened by those in power who seek to do us harm? When we can't even agree on what the definition of the base freedoms we desire are or how to achieve them in the first place. Now, of course, over the past year, we've had a ton of great guests on the show, activists of all stripes, from agorists, homeschoolers, and academics to nonprofit executives, and a little bit more recently, now that we're back into the even-numbered years, candidates for public office. Joining me tonight is candidate for the Republican nomination for U.S. Congress in New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District, Tim Baxter. Tim, thanks for joining the show tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. And that is quite the intro. I've heard a couple of intros, but none quite like that. So.
it starts to come together more seamlessly the more you do it and the more content you have to pull from when you put into a program together. So yeah. At this point, we're a year into the show and the amount of people we've had come on and come through the show the past year has been incredible. I've learned more than I ever thought I would learn.
That's awesome.
Starting a little streaming show that I was just bored and wanted an excuse to talk to people when we were locked down during COVID because the government said I couldn't go to work anymore, to all of a sudden having thousands of people listening to the show and watching it on YouTube and Odyssey, because the people we bring on really do bring enlightenment and intelligence and a different approach each and every week to how to fight for liberty. And that's one of the reasons I wanted you on. A couple weeks ago, I had Julian Assiard on. He's running against you for the same nomination. But me and Julian, we just get along. There's very little me and Julian have ever disagreed with. I've known him for a long time, and I couldn't find anything in approach or policy or anything that I've ever disagreed with him on. Whereas you, there are things I disagree with you on. And there are things that I take fundamentally different approaches to in my activism and how I approach even dealing with legislative activism as a lobbyist and the work I've done at the State House, not elected in New Hampshire, than you have. And I think that's what could make this a fascinating conversation. That's why I wanted to have you come on, because even with those disagreements and differences in approach, we're both fighting for the same thing.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. And, you know, I think there's a lot we agree on. I've got the highest rated. What's that?
No, there's definitely a lot we agree on. It's just, it's hard for me to find libertarians I disagree with. So.
That's one thing libertarians are good at, is arguing over who's the right kind of libertarian.
Yep.
But, you know, honestly, I hate labels. I think it's about the ideas, and it's about the policies that impact people in their real lives. You know, a lot of people, I was watching a documentary about Chris Christie in New Jersey, like a little 9-minute thing. But part of it was saying the guy had, there's three rules for politics, and Christie gets all of them. And one of them was politics is a game. And I think there's a lot of politicians, especially lobbyists, interest groups, that's how they view it. And I think that's certainly not how we view it. This is life and death. This is real people and, you know, corrupt politicians basically creating their tyrannical edicts or executive order that they're taking away people's liberty and freedom. And there needs to be a tremendous level of urgency in fighting back against this stuff. And I basically already outlined it, but you know, I ran for office. I was tired of seeing corrupt politicians take away our liberty and freedom, basically just to enrich themselves and just to grow their own power. And I was ready to fight back. And that's why I ran for state rep. I won. And we certainly need a lot more liberty in Congress. And of all places, New Hampshire, to live for your die state, we should actually have a congressman that believes in liberty. And I think we've got a good shot to get it done.
Well, there's the running joke that the Free State has been making. Anytime somebody comes onto one of the forums or the message boards or onto my other show on the Free State Project show, and they ask us, it's like, how can New Hampshire claim to be the freest state in the country when you have one of the most socialist and backwards congressional delegations in the entire country? And our typical response is, oh, we send the Democrats to D.C. where they can't do any real damage.
That's good.
Look, just get them out of the way, because we only really care about New Hampshire. And that is something I do want to get into you with, the difference between the work you've accomplished and can continue to accomplish in the State House in Concord versus what a congressional representative could possibly accomplish in D.C. But first, one thing I always try to ask everybody, because everybody, this is the one thing that's different across every guest I've ever had, what was your path to liberty, and what does liberty mean to you, and why do you devote so much of your focus, time, energy, and your life towards fighting for liberty and freedom, and what is it that motivates you to do so?
Well, I think we need to frame liberty in a way that's more relatable to people. The way I explain liberty and what I'm fighting for is allowing people to be free in their own lives, whether that's starting a business, getting a job, just trying to live the American dream. And then people should be free to do whatever they want as long as they're not hurting anybody else, which is essentially just the non-aggression principle. That's a definition that is very common sense that 80% of people would agree with. I think if we start from there and then you explain, well, this program, that thing that infringes, that's taking away your freedom. It's giving it to bureaucrats. They're making you poor. They're stealing your freedom, etc. But just start from that basic standpoint that people should be free both economically and then also in their lives.
Yeah, and that's a great and simple and political way to put it almost. And that comes down to the difference between like the political activists and the cultural activists is how you frame things more of a selling point rather than a fuck you, get out of my face kind of a point. Whereas a lot of the cultural libertarians, the anarchists, a lot of people like me who don't have a sales background and a marketing background will approach the definition of liberty am I being detained? Now, what was it that like first possessed you to run for office? And I know this past term, there was a lot of freshman Liberty reps in the house this year. And I think it was the biggest contingent of the New Hampshire House Liberty Caucus we've ever seen. And the biggest contingent of freshmen in that caucus we've ever seen as well. People who just kind of up out of the blue decided, nope, now is the time I'm running. What was it that first motivated you to get involved politically and run for office?
Well, there's a lot of different things. You know, I've always been interested in history and politics. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul, without a doubt, impacted the way I think about stuff. You know, I'm a pretty voracious reader. People, even Rothbard, which I'm not an anarchist, but I've read Rothbard and Mises and Hayek and Friedman, and a lot of these folks that have impacted me. And then also just, you know, societally, a lot of non-political things really woke me up and allowed me to see corruption in my own life, like dealing with my brother in his group home. And I can get into that. But that in particular, I think, kind of motivated me more and got me off the sidelines, so to speak. And then I think the final straw that broke the camel's back was COVID lockdowns. You know, I ran for office May of 2020 is when I announced and started campaigning. And, you know, to see in a few months the unprecedented level of abuses that our politicians, you know, how they were infringing our freedom, that just, you know, I think I just said, I have to step up. I've got to do something about this. Especially being young, I feel like I have no excuse. You know, I've got the energy. So I just did it and I worked hard. You know, I raised a bunch of money. I knocked on 4,000 doors and I won. And now I'm just doing the same thing all over again.
Awesome. It's one of the things that stuck out to me about you, though, is so many of the freshman reps and the freshman Republican reps and the Liberty reps this year say it was the lockdowns. That was the final straw they pushed. They had to do something about it. And even though some of the loudest, most boisterous, like Melissa Blazek, who was turned out to be an incredible Liberty rep, it was just the lockdowns. That was her single motivation to finally do something, get involved and run. And so many like Free Stater reps finally ran because of the lockdowns. That's what got them involved and got them to actually run for office. But so many of them, when they got there, hyper-focused on the lockdowns, almost to the detriment of any other possible legislative agenda that could have improved liberty or expanded liberty in the state. And it was like, oh, we can't do anything until we strip away the governor's emergency powers. And you can see this in the bills that were sponsored by a lot of the freshman reps, where it was, if it's not, it doesn't have to do with vaccines, lockdowns, registries, or the governor's powers, they didn't sponsor it whatsoever. But I look at your legislative record and I see things like reducing registration taxes and deregulating agency fees and like all sorts of other small things aside from just the lockdowns and the pandemic that you went for, and especially in this session to try and expand liberty in the state.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'm co-sponsoring legislation on removing occupational licensing, cryptocurrency freedom. I was on the Ways and Means Committee where we cut every major tax, we cut spending, the only state in the entire country to do that, which is, I almost going to say mind boggling, but I guess it's really not, just sad. And we expanded school choice, EFAs. So there's a lot of different things I've been working on. There's so many different ways in which politicians trample on people's freedom. So I've been trying to kind of work at it different ways. I took on bigger bills that had a harder chance of getting passed in terms of the prime sponsor and more just added, to little smaller bills that I found to be really important as a co-sponsor. So I kind of split it up that way. But there's just so many different issues. And, you know, someone like Melissa, I'm really good friends with Melissa. I'm proud, you know, I have her support. I've got 40 state representatives. I'm proud to have more local endorsements than the rest of the primary field combined, which is a big deal. And just a quick tangent, you know, we've raised over $500,000, Rand Paul, Nagar, which is one of the three major gun groups, Thomas Massey. And we've got tons of local support. So we've got a good shot to finally get a Liberty person in Congress from New Hampshire. It's a big deal. And in particular, if you care about the Free State Project, you know, the fact that the youngest Republican ever elected to Congress might be a staunch Liberty guy, that's going to make the Free State Project explode. So I would just say, though, on that, there's a lot of different reps. And someone like Melissa, for example, she's very passionate about medical freedom. That's why she ran. That's what she wants to do. And, I get that. I respect that.
Yeah, no, I love Melissa. This is not a knock on her. I was speaking with her about an hour ago before we got on the show. And again, she's a great friend, a great rep, and someone I'm really happy to have in the legislature. But, I mean, her, what I was talking to her about was actually something I told, I said I was going to bring up, I wanted you to answer for. Now, a lot of Free Staters, a lot of Liberty people in New Hampshire are very upset with one vote you've had recently. And that was the vote yay on the ITL recommendation for CACR 32.
Yeah.
What is your reasoning for voting in favor of the committee recommendation of inexpedient to legislate on the constitutional amendment for New Hampshire seceding from the United States?
Well, the first thing I would say is there was about 10 Republicans that voted to allow debate on that. And if you don't have debate, then it just gets tabled.
Right.
And I was one of those 10 or so folks. So by, if you want to judge it by that metric, basically every other Republican in a way voted to kill it. I don't support the legislation. That's why I voted against it. But I thought it was... this is, you know, what's being proposed is such an important thing. And there's a lot of people that are really passionate about it. I thought that we should at least debate it. I thought that was important for the public. And so I think if you want to judge it by a fair metric, I should already be above all the other folks.
Yeah, fair enough. There's only 13 people who came out of that perfectly in my mind.
Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from, but What I would just say is I don't support a national divorce. I think if you're looking at it from a liberty perspective, I don't think that other people should either. I think we have a much better opportunity to do things just like nullifying unconstitutional executive orders and unconstitutional laws that violate our liberty. I think nullifying unconstitutional laws, as we see the federal government become more disconnected from the states, is it's almost turning into a moderate position. It's something that I've been very vocal in particular with gun rights and, even with vaccine law. I've proposed legislation to jail politicians if they follow unconstitutional laws, which is pretty hardcore, honestly. Though I did see an article in the Keene Free State Project, there is comments, they covered the article, and then the comments were like, this doesn't go far enough.
There's the old joke that OSHA agents should be shot on sight, and some people may not be joking when they repeat that. But, it boils down to the most mundane and innocent of federal government intrusions into your life, something like OSHA, is still a federal government intrusion into your life. It's still unconstitutional, it's still problematic, and it's still an infringement on your freedoms and your liberty. And that's why people say things like, well, yeah, all OSHA agents should be shot on sight if they're working to empower the state to infringe upon the individual liberties of the individual. Then they are in fact the agents of the state and the enemy of the people. But you mentioned nullification there, and you mentioned just ignoring and pulling back some of the bad federal laws here in New Hampshire as an approach. If elected in D.C., you'll no longer be in Concord. You'll no longer have that voice in Concord in the legislature to be able to make those motions and to push that kind of a direction. So what is it that a single individual, because there isn't a big Liberty caucus in D.C. that's 25% or more of the legislature like there is in Concord, where you have a ton of allies. You have two, maybe three allies in D.C. that you can work with that truly understand freedom and liberty. What is it that you could hope to accomplish there?
Yeah, I think there's two and maybe three on a good day. I guess it depends on the issue. Some folks like Chip Roy or whatever have been, been doing a really good job lately. But just, let's talk about D.C. for a sec. Just two or three days ago, there's a 2,700-page, $1.5 trillion government funding bill It became public at 2 a.m. that day. And then they vote on this 2,000-plus page bill that no one's read. And if you vote against it, they say you hate Social Security and the troops. And that's why the vast majority vote for it. But that's what I'm saying is that's what's wrong, right? DC, my point is DC is absolutely broken. And any one person, right? You know, Julian, for example, who's a great guy, I think has you know, good values for the most part. He, for example, he's got like a 12-point plan for a tax thing, which I think is great. But and maybe it's a good plan. I honestly would have to go back and look at it. But there's no point to that because there is no plans. One representative cannot move legislation in D.C. because they basically don't have an open process the way New Hampshire does. What the one member of Congress can do in New Hampshire, and this is why it's important, is New Hampshire will have one Republican member of Congress. And so you're going to have essentially you'll have two, maybe three statewide Republicans that have clout, right? Obviously, Governor Sununu, who is still going to be king, so to speak, of New Hampshire Republican politics.
Dictator.
What's that?
I'd say dictator more than king.
Depends on if you like him or not, but you know, he's got the power and he's popular and he has a bit, he uses that power to whatever he wants to do, whatever he thinks is best. Whoever that Republican congressman is, they have a big impact in New Hampshire politics, way more than any one rep. And it's vital that that person is a liberty person. If we get someone that's an establishment hack, that sets liberty back. If you think that that establishment hack is not going to play a role in making sure more liberty reps don't get elected in New Hampshire, you're naive. If you want more liberty reps in New Hampshire, you need me to win this congressional seat. It's vital. That's why it's so important. It has nothing to do with DC. Now you're getting me passionate.
That's good. No, that's good because you cannot go into things and expect to have any kind of influence, especially outside of the congressional chambers, if you can't be passionate and speak passionately about things. Because I agree. I agree. There's 435 reps in Congress. Maybe two or three of them have any real actual power. And those are the majority and minority leaders. Because it's been, what, 6 years since an amendment was offered from the floor in the House of Halls of Congress? It's been 8 years since something was sent to a committee by a member of the House rather than by House leadership and by the caucus leadership. It's been 10 years. This is across both parties that where anything has passed without the direct consent of the Speaker of the House. What's the point of being there? And I joke all the time that the point of being there is to fundraise so you can get back there and stay there. And the point of being there is to fundraise so you can get to the next higher office the next time around. But you see, the people who the American public looks to, the people that the American public listens to when it comes to issues of the day, they tend to be the ones who are on C-SPAN giving the impassioned plea about something they care about. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez ranting about Medicare and insulin costs for 10 minutes on C-SPAN at 7 o'clock that riles up half the country. It doesn't matter that she made up half of what she said and it's completely off base and incorrect. She's passionate and she gets people excited.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's important that Liberty folks recognize the importance of this congressional seat for how it impacts New Hampshire politics, especially New Hampshire being a small state. And that money that Republican is going to be fundraising, right, that can flow throughout the state. And that's a very, very important. That's a very important thing. And it's important that we get someone in that seat, you know, that's like-minded. So we're going in circles now, but it's crucial.
Yeah, no, I've had terrible, terrible jokes about like how meaningless it is to be in DC except for like just raising money, because they literally do. The Democrats, and as far as like the effectiveness, it doesn't matter how good of a rep you are. It doesn't matter how principled of a rep you are. If you can't speak to your principles and you can't get people excited behind you, you won't accomplish anything either. Because we see things like Justin Amash. When Justin Amash was in office, he never really accomplished anything on his own. because he couldn't speak passionately about anything. It didn't change my, never mind that he was the most principled libertarian. Never mind that he never went against his values and against his principles on a single vote, a single issue, a single bill. Never missed a single vote. Had the best voting record in the history of the House of Representatives. It's been 2 years since he's been out, and people have already forgotten he ever existed. He already has no influence left in federal politics, even as the only registered libertarian to ever hold a seat in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah.
He's lost all his influence because he can't lead people. He can't be passionate about what he's doing. And he focused too much on policy and too little on getting things done and building coalitions with people he might have disagreed with.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I don't want to talk too much about Justin Amash because I'm really
And I'm a friend. I'm a fan of him. Somebody I've considered a friend and I've worked with. But
he I don't know if you want to say politically naive, but I think about all he raised millions of dollars from people. Right. So I spend most of my day because I'm running to win U.S. Congress. So I spend most of my day asking people for money, whether they have a lot or whether they don't. Most, you know, oftentimes they do. That's why I'm calling them and it's cold calls. But I'm asking people to make a sacrifice. Justin Amash raised millions of dollars over his career and he lit it on fire. He flushed it down the toilet. It was a giant waste. He squandered every opportunity he had by making himself politically irrelevant. And it frustrates me to no end, because if you believe in the principles that he did, why? So that's so frustrating.
So I understood that dives a little into the argument, the Republican versus Libertarian, which is the more effective or pragmatic route. That's the argument that one goes down. Justin Amash isn't someone I actually hold that against, because he stayed a Republican as long as he was effective as a Republican. And he didn't leave the Republican Party and declare his irrelevancy until he was made aware that they intended to redistrict him out of the House anyways.
He probably would have got redistricted, even if he did vote to impeach Trump.
Yeah.
If he didn't vote to impeach Trump, he probably still would have got redistricted, because he was, you know, he voted the way he wanted to. So that's a fair point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe Justin Amash really believed in, you know, all the Russia. It was the Russia stuff. That was the first go around that he voted for. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe he believed in all that crap, but maybe it was just the redistricting. Like, I don't know Justin Amash, so I don't want to speculate for him.
Yeah, he seems to me to be somebody who's too smart to have given up what influence he had for nothing in return, unless he knew there was nothing on the other side either way.
I thought you were just going to say too smart to be in Congress.
But no, let's say. Too smart to be in Congress, I actually consider a pretty low bar. Most of the people in Congress today, I think, are too smart to be in Congress, because the reality is they're there fundraising and networking and lining up book sales and deck pitches and board positions for their spouses. There are very smart people in Congress that are not using their smarts to serve the American people.
Yeah, it's corrupt. That's what's wrong with Washington, is you've got these people, they're staffers, and then they become a lobbyist, and then they move somewhere, and then they run for Congress, and then they build up all these connections, and then 10 years later, they'll make $1 million a year until they retire as a lobbyist or a consultant, or, you know, they get a finance position for a giant corporation like Eric Cantor. And that's what's wrong with our system. We need people that are going to stick to their values and fight for what's right. But
how do you fix it? Like, so you need to fix the system. So you win the primary, Carolyn and Matt go home sad and angry with their Trump money and don't accomplish anything. And then you somehow beat Chris Pappas because there's a fire at the Puritan and he forgets to door knock all week. How do you win? How do you fix it once you get in there?
Yeah. So I think, as we've been hitting on, you need a lot more people. Look at the Freedom Caucus, right? Which the Freedom Caucus members are much better on average than the whole. But you need a group of people. Same thing in New Hampshire. You need a group of like-minded people that push certain values. So if there's 50 people that have my values of making government smaller and protecting individual liberty, you can do something. But at the minimum, New Hampshire, which is the live free or die state, we should send and we should have the best member of Congress should be from New Hampshire. And we should send someone that actually sets an example for the whole country. And hopefully we get more people elected. We have now about 200 liberty-minded reps around the country, all Republican, and they've all come within the past couple of years primarily. There was maybe 10 or 20 that were elected before the last 5 or 6 years, but the rest have all really come with Young Americans for Liberty. And that those, 50 of those people could be in Congress in the next 10 years. There's no reason why that couldn't happen theoretically. So maybe DC can change. It's theoretically possible. But in the meantime, we should set an example for the whole country, and that will make New Hampshire look really damn good.
So you fix DC, you get a Liberty block in DC, you turn the tables so DC is no longer egregiously violating the Constitution at every step and sending mandates to New Hampshire and taking a dollar and giving us 37 cents back for every program with compliance fees attached. What is the role then for the federal government in New Hampshire? Not quite all the way back to secession, not quite to the secession argument, the national divorce argument, but should the federal government exist and continue to exist, and should it be cleaned up ethically and legally as you aim to do, what is its role? Like, what is the future of the federal government in New Hampshire and other states, and how do you keep it restrained to that role?
Yeah, well, the how do you keep it restrained? That's a good question, and that's what I'm going to come back to at the end. But you look at the Constitution, right? The Constitution says Article 1, Section 8, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, these are the specific things the federal government is allowed to do. And obviously, the government is wildly out of control in comparison to what they're supposed to do. The deep state, the administrative state, the fourth branch of government, most of the laws are not written by Congress. They're written by the bureaucracy. That's how our government works right now. It is deeply broken, and we need people at a minimum that are going to vote in stuff that only is explicitly allowed in the Constitution as members of Congress. Anything that is not explicitly constitutional, they shouldn't vote for. And so the role of the federal government in New Hampshire should be as small as possible, because bureaucrats in D.C. are not who should be running our state. And the less power and the less money they have, the better. And we need someone, this is what I say when I speak, I'm running for Congress to annihilate the swamp. And that's what we need to do. We need to take all that power and money and give it back to the states. Now, the question is how to make the Constitution actually be followed. And that's the problem. And what I would say about when I introduced my legislation to jail politicians, if they follow Biden's unconstitutional vaccine mandate, I said, look, the problem with the Constitution is it doesn't have any teeth right now. If we start jailing politicians when they violate our constitutional God-given rights, a lot more politicians would follow the Constitution. So I think that's part of the solution. But I think
now, you said you've read Rothbard, you've read Friedman, all these other great anarchist authors. Have you ever read Spooner?
I'm familiar with Spooner, but I've never read. I know, like, he talks about...
In No Treason, Constitution of No Authority, Spooner wrote what I believe is one of the most single elegant lines of political prose ever written. And I did have the good fortune of yelling that line in a committee hearing at Brody Deshaies after he accused me of treason.
Come on, I
know
that story.
Yeah, it was during the secession hearing for CICR 32 in the State Federal Relations Committee. A couple hundred people showed up to support the bill. I showed up just to record, watch, and pay attention. I had no plans on testifying whatsoever. And Representative Deshaies was the first person to testify and spent an half hour testifying about how even considering secession was unconstitutional, any rep who voted for it or voted in favor of considering it would be guilty of sedition and treason. And that anybody in this room who supported the idea of secession was treasonous and seditionist. And I got up and yelled at him and said, and? Like, So what? The line between sedition and patriotism is pretty blurry, and it just matters on whether or not you win in the end. But it's like, if standing up to an oppressive government is wrong, then I don't want to be right. But I got up to testify, and I said, I have to respond to Representative Deshaies Marks, and I'm not even going to respond to my own words. And I just deadpan and looked him directly in the eye, and I said, as Lysander Spooner wrote in No Treason, the Constitution of No Authority, be the Constitution one thing or another, this much is certain. Either it has failed to prevent such tyranny as we live under, or it has been either it has allowed such tyranny as we live under, or it has been powerless to prevent it. Either way, the document is unfit to exist.
Yeah.
And Spooner wrote that in the 1800s. How much worse has that tyranny gotten since then?
When exactly was that written? Do you know? I'm sure we could look it up.
I'll look it up right now.
He wrote it in like 1812 when the federal government was like
1867.
In 1867. So yeah, what the federal government was probably 2% of GDP. So maybe less. So it was 1/10 or more, like smaller than what the federal government is now. Yeah, look, if the federal government was 2% of GDP, I probably wouldn't be in politics right now.
Well, and remember, this country was founded on sedition and treason. This country is founded on people standing up and saying, enough, we are going to violently overthrow those who we deem oppressors. And they did so over a 3% tax on tea? Like, come on. Like 30% of your income isn't enough, people?
Yeah, we're in a different world now, is the answer, Justin. And some people say politics is downstream from culture. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's not a coincidence that the biggest impact, I would say, in the past couple decades on convincing people to become liberty-minded was a politician, Ron Paul. You know, most people... It's pretty remarkable. Most people give no shits, no shits. It is a podcast. Who cares? Most people give no shits about local stuff, maybe a little bit now because they care about CRT and the unions care. Then you go to state rep. Most people still don't care. You go to Congress. A couple people care a little bit, but still not really. You go to Senate and governor. More people care, but you go to president. People care. It's like it's the way the mind works. It just gravitates up this pyramid, and everything is kind of fixated on that. It's kind of what's maybe allows to some degree a lot of the bad outcomes we see in politics. But I think really the only way we're going to educate people is by getting better people elected throughout the political system that then educate people. Which is a challenge in and of itself. Like, if you're running for office and your strategy is, I'm just going to convince everyone to believe in liberty and freedom, and that's how I'm going to get elected, you're probably never going to win. Even if you're running for president, you know, you do sales. So, you know, when you're selling someone, it's not necessarily you're trying to convince them that you're right and they're wrong. It's more like you're trying to figure out what's important to them, and then position whatever it is in a way that makes sense to them. It's a big difference when you understand it.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I've been saying politics is downstream from culture since I first started to get involved in politics, because my work and my history, I work in marketing and fundraising and development. It's what I do for a living. But like my passion projects, I do a lot of artwork. I do a lot of work with community artists and community centers. And the past year and a half now during COVID, I've been working to help build and fund a community center in Manchester that specifically caters to the libertarian community and hosts events to like do liberty outreach for Free Staters in Manchester. Because to me, it's no longer about getting people to move. I think the Free State Project has kind of reached a critical mass of people moving from out of state, and it's reached a point where now we're starting to see the positive results from the little diasporas and small communities that Free Staters have built around the state and succeeding in voluntary lifestyles, that natives are starting to get interested. Hey, what's going on? Let's go check out those Free Staters down at the club down the street. And And we're starting to see more and more people self-identifying as Free Staters who were natively born here than those are moving. And a shift in that culture is the most positive thing.
I've been asked before, like, oh, when did you move here? And I just say, no, I'm not smart. I just got lucky.
Yeah, you're lucky to be born here. You're smart if you stay. That's the saying we use. Jeremy Kaufman's actually trying to redefine what is a Free Stater. It's no longer somebody who's moved to New Hampshire. It's just you're a libertarian in New Hampshire. Screw it. because the reality is, anybody
happen, you guys are just doing that because when I win, you want to say that your congressman is a Free Stater, it's going to help your marketing.
I am all about using you for our marketing if it helps and it works.
You will.
The reality is, I never signed the Free State Project's intent pledge to move. I did not move to New Hampshire for political reasons or for the Free State Project. I moved to New Hampshire because I was living on Cape Cod in Massachusetts and got a new job in Lowell. Nashua was just a reduction in my commute. And then I had a minor disagreement with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts over what constituted a legally owned firearm. and the state troopers had some issues with the inventory in my safe. And so it became easier to move than to continue commuting.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you did move here for more freedom in a way.
Correct. But not because of the Free State Project.
Yeah. No, that's very interesting. And I think, look at what's happening in Florida, right? There's a lot of people moving to Florida.
It's a bait and switch. Bait and switch, and I hate it. And I will say this, and I'm going to give New Hampshire Republicans all the credit in the world over Florida Republicans for this, especially our legislative caucus. Everyone's eyes have been on COVID and the lockdowns and restrictions and executive powers. And everyone's saying, look how free Florida is. They never locked down. Florida never locked down because the governor used executive power to overrule agencies and branches and stop everything. And the governor used executive power to pass mandates against people voluntarily locking down and voluntarily shutting down. And while the governor in New Hampshire initially went along with the lockdowns and all the bad juju, and it looked like Florida was a freer and safer place than New Hampshire for a little bit there, your class in the legislature didn't turn around and enact edicts by fiat and pass laws mandating that people be free. All you did was strip away the powers of the governor to infringe upon their freedom. Where Florida stayed open, but did so by expanding the power of the state to regulate private business.
Well, I think Florida did shut down. South Dakota with Chrissy Noem was the only state that never completely shut down. Right. Florida shut down maybe a month. Like, that's it. It was a very small amount of time. And granted, things were very different. No one knew exactly what COVID's a 1% death rate roughly, and it depends on the type. And obviously what your risk factors are, impacts all of that, blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of it, it's not necessarily like they are looking, okay, like we give, like the way Cato might do it, New Hampshire gets a 9.5 and Florida gets an 8.7. I think people see DeSantis and they want to be a part of a state where they are in the majority, sort of that tribal, it's that populist fever. And I think this is how liberty can win is – liberty is very well positioned if we sort of use populism, because liberty is very abstract ideologically. It's why it's been hard for it to win, because there's no clear enemy, right? We just want people to be free. And if you have nativism, right, the enemy is very clear. Socialism, right, the enemy is rich people. What the enemy should be for liberty is politicians and bureaucrats that are taking away your freedom, that are making you poorer. So it's the link can be so clear, and we can tap in to populism to make liberty win. And I think DeSantis, people just want to be in a state where they feel like they're in the majority, and they see their governor that's sort of vehemently fighting against the fake news media. And that's why people have moved to Florida. And I think DeSantis is a good governor. And I think if more, you know, if Liberty people kind of took a little bit of a lead from sort of not necessarily the policies, and the policies are good overall, but there's things you could critique about DeSantis, sure. But just the messaging, I think would be in a better spot.
Sure, but they have to, a Liberty person would have to replace Sununu in order to even be able to get to the podium and give the messaging here in New Hampshire. And that's the real big hurdle, is building someone up to replace Sununu, because he is a legacy. He's New Hampshire royalty, and we're still dealing with Democrats in the North Country who aren't aware that JFK has been assassinated yet, and think that Democrats are still the fiscally conservative party. So,
well, it's the other thing I'd say is, like, if the people – you know, you got to think about the next 5-10 years. If you're moving for the free state project, right, and you want a free state, you need to have a governor that believes in liberty, that will fight for liberty all the time. And Sununu, you know, there's things that he's been with us on, and there's things like on COVID, right? Like I was, whatever it is, a mask mandate, right, that Sununu did, I was against that, because that's not pro-liberty. That's violating your freedom. And whoever wins this congressional seat is on the short list, obviously, in the future to be a potential governor. And that's vital for the liberty community as well.
Hopefully. Now, with COVID kind of in the rear view, with everyone giving up on it, like finally admitting the facts that just it wasn't as bad as anyone wanted it to be. The lockdowns were unnecessary. I think the CDC put out a study that said only about 9,000 people actually died of COVID. Everyone else had other comorbidities, other issues. Only about 9,000 total people in the U.S. died of just COVID, and the CDC admitted that. What are the big issues? Like, we're going into an election year, and you're talking about embracing populist messaging. So what are the big popular issues that you need to be talking about going into this year?
Yeah, I think the biggest things are the economy and then education, especially if you're looking at independent voters. Independents can vote in this Republican primary, so they're a big slice of the electorate. But, you know, inflation is at a 40-year high. Even, you know, if you look at just the methodology before they changed it, it's at 15%. It's wildly out of control. And we printed more money in the last 2 years than any time in, you know, world history. And so that's why we see the inflation that we see, right? The Federal Reserve added over $4+ trillion to their balance sheet. It's not rocket science. You know, I like to say those $1,200 stimulus checks, they came with the price, and you're seeing that price now. So that's number one. And explaining how are you going to stop inflation? You know, one thing I can do is obviously I can talk about why inflation is happening. I understand, you know, monetary policy, but then also the correct thing, what we did in New Hampshire, actually cutting spending and cutting taxes. That's what DC needs to do. And that's going to be very vital in the primary. You know, I'm the only business owner that's currently running. You know, there's some other people that work for businesses, but that's different than running a business. And that's helpful as well with just like positioning yourself politically, obviously. Educational freedom, making sure people have a quality education. That's really important. And then, you know, maybe something like immigration with Republican primary voters and medical freedom. I'm the only candidate that said Fauci should be in prison publicly, to my knowledge. So that's
in your race, maybe. Jeremy Kaufman has said far more.
Yeah. No, thanks in this race running for Congress. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. Yeah. Jeremy Kaufman, I watch his videos for fun before I go to bed. They're more exciting than mine. Yeah, he's a character. Topic.
No, it's – but, like, you're talking about embracing populism. These are all great issues that are affecting a lot of people. It's just I'm wondering if people realize that this is what's affecting them. Like, you talk about inflation and the economy, and I feel like your educated conservative voter base and your educated libertarian voter base understands inflation. and understands that's an issue. But for some reason, Joe Biden gets on national television and says inflation isn't a problem, it's an asset. And the mainstream media goes to bat for him and defends that and convinces people that, no, inflation's a good thing. The right is lying to you. Like, so how do you get through to these people? And like, because to me, the real big issues that I want to see people look at, and again, I'm not your typical average American voter. I'm much more higher, like focused echelon voter here. Whereas I want to look at American and New Hampshire and localized energy independence. I want to see the deregulation of nuclear and more nuclear power and a more robust nuclear power grid in the country. I want to see more expanded pipeline and refining of fossil fuels in the U.S. because we will never get to 100% nuclear, like automobile. We actually don't. I don't think there's enough lithium on the planet to build enough batteries to go 100% electric for vehicles, just in how we currently do it. But like, first and foremost, I'm an anti-war voter. As someone with a military background, as someone who has seen the worst of war, who has been through the worst of war, all based on lies told by the U.S. government, I'm a first and foremost anti-war activist, and I don't think that's a popular position nowadays.
I think it depends how you frame it, is the honest answer, Justin. Like, I think a lot of Republicans, they support Donald Trump's America First foreign policy. What exactly that means to them, you know, Republican voters obviously don't consider themselves anti-war per se. That sounds like someone with blue hair, not someone with a beard like you. But I think, you know, I think that, like, you're asking, like, do voters care about inflation or whatever? Like, people can't afford to put food on the table and fill up their tank.
Yeah, like, and they don't know that it's inflation is the root cause of that. So how do you convince them?
They don't know that it's monetary policy. They don't know that it's the $1,200 stimulus checks. But they know that shit is way more expensive than it used to be. And if you look at the polling, like, basically what does stick is that we spent a crap ton of money. Politicians are spending like drunken sailors, and that's causing the inflation. That is simple enough and common sense enough that average voters get it, especially Republican voters, people that are going to vote in the primary, independents that lean Republican. And that's a winning issue. And then the education, especially with women voters that we've lost in the Trump era on the margins, that's a great issue to win those people back. Those are the two biggest things. And I think some of these other issues that there's lots of things that impact people's life, but if you don't necessarily see the direct impact in your life every day, I'm going to list some examples. Illegal immigration, the opioid epidemic, even something like critical race theory itself, which it might feel less abstract if your child's in school. Like, something like the opioid epidemic and illegal immigration, if you don't, and like the election being stolen, right? These type of issues, just the election integrity, whatever you want to call it, these types of issues, they become less important in people's mind when they literally can't afford to eat, right? At things that might feel a little more abstract, even if people really care, someone might think the election wasn't stolen or the election was stolen, but this like crusade of like Donald Trump's destroying our democracy, less important when you can barely afford to eat. So I think Republicans are going to do really well. I think in general, the other thing, and this is a big thing I talk about, is like the corruption. People are sick of the corruption. They want people that are authentic. I think people can tell that I'm authentic and I really believe in what I'm fighting for. And I think that gives me an advantage over, you know, the other three people in the race that, you know, and not to, Julian's a great guy, and I think Julian will do well if he wins, but you've got this race where you've got four people that are on track to raise about $1 million or more for the primary. And the question is, are we going to get a Liberty Republican that believes in freedom, or are we going to get, you know, another one that's kind of more typical, that's more establishment? That's the choice here.
Yeah, it's weird because this is like, it's one of the larger primaries we've had in recent history in New Hampshire, where there's no clear front. Like CD2's primary, like 4 years ago, there was a big field, but there was very clearly two front runners, and it was either Stuart Levinson or Steve Negrin. Nobody else was actually in the race. This time around, it's a big field, and it's the everyone thinks it's a toss-up of a big field. Like, who's going to win? Because the reality is, at five candidates, you can win with 19%. Like, that's how crazy these elections get. But for such a big field, I am shocked at how familiar I am with every single candidate in the field. Where, like, Julian is somebody who I am friends with and know on a personal basis. And you're someone who I'm very familiar with your legislative record because of my work with NHLA and liberty activism. And Gail Huff is somebody who I've worked with in the past and never support in a million years after having worked with her husband and her family. And Matt Mowers is somebody who I've gone out of my way to trying to convince people is a horrible, horrible, horrible representation of conservatism in America. And his brand of Trump populism is taking the Republican Party back 100 years. But so I don't know Caroline Leavitt at all. And that's the one wild card to me, because I don't know anything about her. So
yeah, look, like, who knows what Caroline would do? She has no track record, so I really don't like to say I haven't said anything in particular negative about anyone. That's just, I talk about what I've done, right. I've got a proven track record of fighting for liberty. As I said, I have the most pro-liberty voting record, the highest NHLA score of someone to ever run for Congress in New Hampshire. I'm a staunch fighter for liberty. And we have a tremendous opportunity here. If we get a liberty person in this seat, it's going to pay dividends for decades in New Hampshire. It's vital. And if you want to see a liberty guy in Congress and you're listening out there, go to baxterforcongress.com/donate and help us win.
Getting ahead of my curve there. I was going to tell you, where can people follow you? Where can they learn more about the campaign, what you're doing, keep up to date with your trail and upcoming events? But BaxterForCongress.com, check the description. If you're watching live, check the screen right there in front of you. You can't help but miss the big letters. So yeah. And you're on social media too.
Yeah. Oh, you got my Twitter, Tim Baxter NH. And then I think my Facebook is at Tim Baxter 603 or Tim Baxter NH. I think good it luck. Was.
You'd have to get me on to Facebook to go look for it. So that's a whole other problem.
I think it's I think it was Tim Baxter 603 and now it's Tim Baxter NH. I actually remember there was like a 10-minute argument with my team. Like, no one knows what 603 is. And I was like, you're not from New Hampshire. Like, what are you saying? And then the people from New Hampshire were like, yes, we should keep Tim Baxter 603. And then finally we all agreed Tim Baxter NH.
It's hard picking a good handle. It really is. I remember the first time I ran for office, I just went on quick, signed up for a Twitter account. I didn't even have a Twitter at that point in time. Now I love Twitter. It's the greatest thing in the world. But like at the time, I didn't even have a Twitter account. So I just, oh, sure, I'm running as a libertarian, whatever. Put my initials for liberty. Cool. And then like 2 weeks later, a member of my team was like, dude, did you really set your handle to jerk off for liberty? I'm like, motherfucker. All right. And so I went and changed it. And like, thank you for catching that. I would have never noticed J-O for liberty being a problem. And then when I was working for Jo Jorgensen, when she ran for president in 2020, within like an hour of her winning the nomination, somebody set up she set up the Twitter account for the campaign, and somebody set it up and they used that same handle, Joe for Liberty. And I had to explain to this 70-year-old woman about modern internet euphemisms and how this wasn't going to go well. So, yeah. And then we got I'm With Her trending again for a weird reason. So, hey,
yeah, I don't know if I've said this already, but I think all political parties suck. All political parties suck. That's why I don't really I have nothing against the Libertarian Party, but I don't understand what the impetus is for like we need to be in the Libertarian Party. Political parties, they all suck. They're all stupid. What matters is ideas and helping people in their real lives. Now, so, if you can use this, you can talk in a sec. But this is my last thought on this. If you can use a political party like the Libertarian Party to move the Overton window and change the discussion, yep, then I think that's productive use of a minor party. That makes sense to me. I think this, like, we're going to run someone like Joe, who's a more respectable, like, trying to like win elected office or get a higher percentage. And that's somehow like that's a pipe dream in my idea.
So I actually 100% agree with you. And as someone who's a lifetime member of the Libertarian Party who does a lot of activism and outreach work for the Libertarian Party, I actually agree with you. But I think the difference is, like, look at what we're doing with the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. We're using it to try and shift that Overton window. What we're doing with Jeremy's campaign is different. We know we're not going to win that election, but we can make a lot of noise and make a lot of people think about the issues that we want them to think about. And so we can have a productive outlet in that manner. In other states, not so much. And in other states, I tell people, like Marshall Burt got elected as a Libertarian in Wyoming to the state legislature. And he's been more effective as a Libertarian than he could have been as a Republican, because there is no Republican Liberty Caucus in that state. He would have gotten nothing through House leadership. He would have, if it weren't for the fact that he stood out as a third party member, and if they silenced his bills, it would be a news event. He would have no influence and nothing to do. So in other states, building the Libertarian Party infrastructure to actually challenge the status quo of establishment politics is a meaningful endeavor. Except, like, New Hampshire, we have the third largest parliamentary body in the world, the most representative house in the world, and the largest Liberty Caucus in history. So if your goal is to actually have an impact and affect, like, one person in the New Hampshire House is not going to make a difference. And we've seen this as recently as 2018. We had three Libertarian reps in New Hampshire in the House, and they weren't able to accomplish anything with just three of them. In 2008, we had 12 Libertarians in the New Hampshire House. They weren't able to accomplish anything, even with a caucus of that size. In 2000, there was two Libertarians in the New Hampshire House. They weren't able to accomplish anything. And even when one of them was Steve Valancourt, arguably one of the most popular elected representatives in New Hampshire history, wasn't able to accomplish anything as a Libertarian. Just because of the size of the legislature and the size of the House and the reliance on a caucus behind you to do anything. So yeah, in New Hampshire, I do tell people, what's your goal? Are you trying to push the Overton window? Are you trying to bring people into the fold of the Liberty Movement? Are you trying to reach new voters who are disaffected and don't have a team to begin with? Run as a Libertarian. Are you trying to get elected and have a positive impact? Figure out which is the majority party in your district and go register. I don't care if you run as a Democrat. I'm waiting for a good Libertarian free stater to run in and get elected and start the Democratic Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, I know that's happened before. Like Amanda Bolden, are you familiar with her?
Before she went crazy.
Well, yeah. So you are, and that's yeah. That's the problem. Is, you know, I don't know if it's just that, like, what to me ideologically, what the Republican Party is supposed to be in theory lines up a lot better with libertarianism than what the Democrat ideology, if you think about it, it goes closer to control. Like if you ever watch a Marco Rubio town hall from when he's running for president, he almost sounds like his beginning, like, sounds like a libertarian. He's talking about like individual liberty and freedom and like the American dream, and like there's a lot of Republicans that think they're libertarians, and then like they get to the policies and they're like, no, actually we want this subsidy.
Right. So like Ronald Reagan, any speech Ronald Reagan ever gave his entire career, his campaigns from running for governor of California to president, he sounded like one of the best libertarians that ever ran for public office. And then he got elected and ramped up the war on drugs with a targeted destruction of minority communities in this country and started two international wars.
Yeah, so my point, I get what you're saying, and yeah. the point though is that I think this is the problem with the Amanda Boldens of the world, is the Republican Party, there's a lot of Republican voters that care about liberty. Whether they actually do that or not is another thing. Democrats, sure. Most of them, they don't care about freedom, right? They care about, you know, I don't know, what they care about, making sure people are helped or making sure that everyone's equal or... And that's what happens is it's just a machine, the Democrat Party. And that's why some of these reps, I don't know Amanda Bolden. So
I don't think it's lasting. I think it's breaking apart. So and here's the thing is like there are two Democrats in the House right now who I consider friends. And I've told them both I wouldn't vote for them ever, given their policies. But I do consider them friends. Like, I'll go and get a drinks with you. No problem. Yeah. You're good people. Alan Reid and Tony LaBranche. They're both great people.
They're independents now.
Right. The Democratic Party is falling apart, and it's losing anybody who thinks independently of the machine.
Yeah, I just met Ellen. She was at
Liberty Forum.
Yeah. She seemed like a very good, like, I don't agree with her policies, but she seemed like a very good rep, like doing what she's supposed to be. She believes in policies, trying to build coalitions, talking about issues honestly. What I wish, you know, every rep would do. It was very good to see someone like that. Which is probably why she's an independent now.
Yeah.
And I forget what the specific bill was. I think it was a bill dealing with China, and I believe it was Tony's bill, or Tony was a co-sponsor. I could be remembering this
wrong. To condemn the Chinese Communist Party?
Yeah, or maybe that's his bill. Maybe it was because – so I could be getting this wrong, but like all the Democrats just voted against something with China that was divesting the New Hampshire pension system from China. And I thought that Tony was a co-sponsor, but like all the Democrats were against it. And in my head was like, was this retribution because they left? You know, I don't know. It's just the Democrat Party is vicious. That's the one
thing. They are. So I remember names escaping me. Joe, he was a Democrat rep who switched to the Libertarian Party. He got, and his story was actually hilarious. Not hilarious. It was tragic, but like, compelling as hell. He switched from Democrat to Libertarian over gun control was his big thing.
Wow.
And when he got elected as a Democrat, he was a staunch, ardent, college-aged, keen Democrat who wanted gun control. And then he went out to Standing Rock to protest the Keystone Pipeline. And when he came back, he was telling stories about how private police forces and state troopers were rounding up people with weapons and no one was able to defend themselves. And that's why he could no longer in good conscience support gun control.
Wow.
And they ripped him off every committee. They took away all his committee assignment. He was kicked out of the caucus. He was not allowed. He was never recognized in caucus meetings after that. And so he left the party.
That's intense.
So, but the monolith is falling apart, and I'm excited to see it fall apart. I would love to see the Democratic Party splinter in on itself into two or three more honest parties. Because
I just, you know,
even if I disagree with them all, like if there was just a progressive socialist party, I think I'd respect them more than Democrats.
That's true. They'd be less corrupt. You know, Bernie is crazy, but I respect that he's honest and sincere. And there's something to be said for that. But right. I just think more broadly, what we've begun to accomplish in New Hampshire, we've got a tremendous amount of Liberty folks elected in the House, 50 to 100, depending on, you know, how you judge it. And we've gotten, you know, we've passed an unprecedented amount of stuff, and there's so much more that we can do. I'm really optimistic, and we just need to drive that forward for years to come. And that's what I want to do. I want to help lead the Liberty Movement here in New Hampshire and around the country. It's why I'm running for Congress, to stop corrupt politicians taking away our liberty and freedom. So everyone that's listening out there that's in New Hampshire, I'm the guy that is fighting for liberty. We've raised $500,000. Rand Paul, Thomas Massey, 40 plus state reps have endorsed me. We can win this race, and I want to earn your vote. And if you do decide to support me, you can endorse me on my website. You can volunteer. But I hope I can earn your vote, because I'm a proven fighter for liberty, and that's what I'll do in Congress.
And just as important of a question here, then, for those who don't give a shit about DC, who's running to replace you?
So there's multiple people that either have run and had like they would have got endorsed by NHLA, or folks that are members of NHLA that could run. Part of why it's like, who is it going to be, is because they're changing the state rep districts, and my current state rep district is probably going to get split in half, the two towns. So the Hampton Falls section, there's someone that has an A+ from NHLA, where Hampton Falls would be with like Southampton and Kingston, I believe. And that's JD, So he would run for that. And so then what happens is Seabrook goes from like three-ish to like two. And so Tina Harley, I believe, is going to run. And then you've also got some someone like Bill Roser, who got endorsed by NHLA but lost last time. So long story short is there's lots of good replacements from a Liberty perspective, which is good, really good. Yeah.
For me, as someone like myself who's more hyper-focused on local in New Hampshire, that's good to hear.
It's a good question, yeah. No, and I've definitely – and also there's a lot of really exciting state Senate races that are getting that are heating up, and there's lots of opportunities for Liberty folks there in New Hampshire.
Yep, and they redistricted the heck out of some of the state Senate seats too, unfortunately. I know I was talking to Carla Garrick the other day, and she's not sure if she's going to run again. Because the new map changed her district so dramatically.
She can't win, but there's other Liberty folks that...
I think she could have won. If the district didn't change, I think she could have eventually won. They probably say they took Goffstown out of her district.
Yeah.
So,
but I think, like, for example, the Goffstown district now... You know, that is a much better opportunity for a Liberty person.
Right. I think Michael Yakubovich is running for that one now.
He has not announced it. He has said, I believe, that he's thinking about it. So I guess we'll see what he does. But obviously, you know, he's got a staunch Liberty-minded record. So hopefully.
He hasn't asked me for a check yet, so it's not official. So, hey, well, it's been a real pleasure having you. It's great talk.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, we didn't even get into all the current events that are going on. So much to talk about. To talk about with what's going on in the world. Thank you so much for coming on. Good luck in the primary. And everybody, remember, you can check out BaxterForCongress.com for more information. Follow his campaign events and the goings-on around the state of New Hampshire as he gets ready to roll. And thank you so much for watching. Don't forget to hit that big red subscribe button if you're on YouTube or on Odyssey. Join the channel. Head over to Patreon. Join our production club. And until next time, be free.
It's a good ending.
Thanks again for tuning in and joining us tonight. Make sure you hit that like button and leave a comment below to let us know your thoughts. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live. If you enjoyed this content, you can join our production team on Patreon by following the link in the description. And don't forget to follow on social media and join our community Discord channel by following the links in the description as well. The best part of all of this is the community that we're building and growing. So go ahead and join us. And thanks once again to our awesome sponsors and patrons for making all of this possible. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast. So until next time, everybody, be free.